We're talking with Stuart Davis, Jay King, and Kirsten Blackburn about the Experiencer Group. And, of course, these paranormal, supernatural, weird experiences, call them what you will, are often scary. They can be threatening. They certainly can be deeply disturbing and are unwelcome often. They can leave psychological scars. So something like the Experiencer Group can not only be a safe haven where you can share that information, share your experiences with like-minded folks and not worry about trolls and debunkers, but also you might pick up some tips on whether there are defense strategies in fighting off some of these things if they are truly unwelcome. We're going to get into that, and then in a little bit, we'll take some of your calls and questions. Maybe you want to hook up with the Experiencer Group yourself. We'll be right back. Stuart Davis, I know that in the course of both your interview program and the Experiencer Group that you must hear stories that are really unpleasant, threatening, unwelcome. You know, I've heard these kinds of experiences, poltergeist experiences in particular, where it's not only disturbing to the whole house and hard on people's personal lives, but really gets to the point where it is really beyond spooky. So is there a way to defend yourself? Have you any insight into that? I know you have one interview clip that we wanted to share at some point tonight of a guy named Gordon White. Maybe you can set that up.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question and a really important one. One of the more pressing urgencies many experiencers feel is wanting to know what recourse they have. What can they do to either alter or stop the experience if they feel it to be negative? Or also, in many cases, participate in transmuting it into something positive and more mutual. So a couple of things on that before I cue up Gordon real briefly is I did write a piece called Human Sovereignty and the ET Presence, which is on my site, and that's a much longer post that goes into some deep detail on responses and actions experiencers can implement in order to have some sovereignty and say when possible over how this goes. Beyond that, there are certainly a host of other spiritual practices, anything ranging from banishing to any of the mystical or esoteric lineages from Vajrayana Buddhism or contemplative Christianity, of course. You've probably heard the news that there's been a great increase in exorcisms, actually. The Catholic Church has been rolling out a new army, basically, in response to that. But within each lineage, typically, there are practices and rituals that can be conducted. And that is a big point of conversation within the Experiencer Group and these meetups. As Jan Kirsten were referencing, you know, we get to compare notes, and one of the things we compare is what has worked for you. So all kinds of different perspectives, people coming forward and say, well, I did this practice and this was the result, and you can, in a real pragmatic way, test that. And my approach is always to use a utilitarian, keep whatever is working for you, ditch what is not. And when I'm working one-on-one with people, I do offer them a range of practices to try in order to see if they can have an effect and an influence on their experiences. Beyond that, Gordon White and the clip that we're going to hear offers a really beautiful and unique take, his being basically that one of the problems in some kinds of contact between non-human entities and humans is that we don't understand how we appear to non-human entities. And so basically, for instance, they don't see a house. They see humans sleeping, and unless the right signaling and framework is put together to communicate to these entities, this is a human domicile and you're not welcome here unless invited. His view is that just making some simple adjustments oftentimes will completely eradicate unwanted contact from non-human entities. He was like, 90% of the time that works. Sometimes you need to bring out the big guns, yes, but typically not. So that's what he's speaking to in this clip that we're going to hear.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, the best one for the kind of unwanted entity encounters like that, do house protection, and that stops it. And that's really interesting because I think that's rules-based. what you are telling the universe is that this is a human habitation, that you're not effectively camping in the woods. Because if you haven't, from a spirit perspective, turned your house into a dwelling for humans, and that's done with magic, that's not done with bricks, you look like fair game. You just look like you're sleeping in the field to them. What do they know, bricks? Whereas if you actually make your house a home in a magical sense, and this is literally off the shelf, you don't need to be good at this, because the thing about magic is you know it, but you just need the emotional and psychological permission to validate your own experiences. And then the next step is literally a house blessing kit, and literally call me in the morning. If you're sick of those kind of encounters, turn your house into a human dwelling. Let the spirit world see it as a place that humans live, and watch as they change their behavior, because that's real animism stuff. Because people want to go to like exorcisms and what do I say when they show up? Yeah, there are kind of like more intense interventions if you need them. But in most cases, that won't get to the root cause. The root cause is your house isn't a human dwelling as far as the spirit world is concerned.
So Stuart, a cleaning kit, what would that be? Like burning sage? You know, which a lot of people do when they move into a new house anyway.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's kind of funny, but completely sincere, is that Gordon is literally recommending that people go to Etsy, and you can Google this and you'll see dozens and dozens of options pop up immediately. But there's these home protection kits. So I think sage is one component in a larger menu. They're not expensive. They range between $20 to $50, and they include minerals and other elemental, I believe salt is a component. But basically, it's a little toolbox that shows up at your house, and you get instructions about how to configure these items in your home. And that is the signaling that he's describing, which communicates to the non-human entities, this is a human domicile. And his feeling is that most times, at least in regards to perhaps the more spiritual dimension of these kinds of conundrums, that most times that works really, really well. And then the other occasions where you need bigger guns, that's more of a rare event, but there's work for that as well.
Jay, I want to ask you, was it ever gotten to the point where you were really threatened, that you felt you were in danger? Either the poltergeist things that seemed to follow you, the hitchhiker things that maybe followed you, where you had to take steps to protect yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a hard thing because, like, you know, there's so many times where it just seems like you're working on their schedule, you know, like whoever they are, and it can be, you know, like it seems like there's not necessarily a pattern or rhyme or reason to why these things happen, and then or when they happen, or are these just, is the pattern like some kind of like overlapping reality, you know, between like one universe and another, or what is it that really creates these kind of openings where sometimes they'll just be like, you know, like an onslaught of experiences in a short amount of time, and then, you know, crickets for a while. And so, yeah, absolutely. And it's challenging to like, one of the most amazing things that I'm super thankful for, and I heard Stuart talking about this earlier, is just like what happens when you're able to have that kind of situation of ontological shock with somebody else, when you're able to have that shock experience, like what is reality, when somebody else is there, like the amount of thankfulness that can kind of create, where it's not just a shared experience. It's like, yes, that really happened. This is bigger than my own brain, you know? And I think that's one of the things that the experiencer group really does as well, is that we can kind of compare notes later, and we can look at these things, and we can see like how shared they can be, and we can try to move forward with them.
Kirsten, let me ask you this, and then maybe Stuart after that would like to chime in. But I've seen recent research by a group of professionals. It's a group called Free that was co-founded by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, meant to be sort of a safe haven and doing research into abductions, abduction and alien encounter, close encounter kind of cases, their take on things is that over the long run, abductees might be really terrified and upset and psychologically disturbed by these experiences. But in the long run, they kind of get used to it and they come around to realizing that it's a beneficial thing. And I know a bunch of abductees who, at a minimum, they're not at that point. They don't think it's positive at all. They want it to stop. So I don't know if you've weighed in on that in terms of the experiencer groups that you've been in touch with, but what is your take?
Well, I've definitely heard this for sure. And I think that, you know, of course, we have no definite answers around this, but, you know, I'm particularly fond of the work of Kathleen Martin. And, you know, I've read a couple of her books about abduction. And, you know, one of the things that comes up around abduction is when the abductee is asked, do you want this to stop? Sometimes they, even though they've had traumatic experiences, they're not ready for it to stop. And so there's some kind of a component there where they're recognizing that there's something in it. And along with that is what I kind of mentioned before about these gifts that are kind of given to contactees and abductees with this increased amount of psychic ability or precognitive dreams, increased empathy and things like that, is that there are things that are kind of left behind that seem beneficial to us as human beings. But I also feel like there are so many people who are still really in the trauma. They've experienced so much trauma that they need to be able to deal with that. And that is really, really important.
Stuart, do you want to weigh in on that about how it's in our own interests in the long run?
Well, I think Kirsten and Jay, that's beautifully put. It's a very important question. And I would just say briefly that, A, with the experiencer group, we're not advancing a particular interpretation. We've feel that it's people's own journey. We want to support them and their understanding and healing, but we're not advancing a particular interpretation of any of these phenomena. But beyond that, I think that it's really helpful, and we are maturing more collectively into a place where we don't succumb to the temptation to reduce things to simple binaries. This is this good or is this bad?
Right.
Are these? It's very complicated. It's a very sophisticated and nuanced set of puzzles that we're living here, and we try to hold space. I'll just speak for myself. I try to hold the dichotomy and paradox all at the same time, and allowing for continued learning and growth because, as I mentioned earlier, like one thing that these anomalous experiences do have in common is that they are developmental drivers. One thing you can find as a common denominator among a broad array of these experiences is that they change people. People grow, develop. Sometimes it's very difficult. It goes on for the rest of their lives, but they're developmental drivers. And so that's complicated. And I think we're growing into a more well-developed capacity to hold those paradoxes.
So I have some other ground I want to cover with you, but there's people on the phones. We'll maybe take a call here, and then we'll come back to our conversation. We're going to the Wildcard Line, New York City. Good morning. What's on your mind?
Yes. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. How you doing?
Yes. I'm wonderful. This is my ad in New York City. Thanks for taking my call. Fascinating conversation. So I guess I have a bit of a two or three parter. I would like Stuart to further talk about the praying mantis phenomenon. I'd like to hear more about you kind of left me up in the air. The purple, something seemed to be resplendent. I'd like you to go further into that, and what whether there were humanoid and the humanoid aspects, because you also referred to insects, but also I'd like to know if you've looked into DMT. I can't say the full name out, but there have been reports such as the researcher who has had subjects on DMT, where they report seeing extra-dimensional or alien creatures, definitely the grays, and I think there have been reports, and maybe you can clarify, of the praying mantis phenomenon on DMT. And lastly, I want to know, I was hearing some program called Zeitgeist, and it was explaining the origins of our modern religions and traditions in terms of astronomy and astrological aspects of the sun, etc. So as we get into the age of Aquarius, I'd like you could connect your experiences to even coming out of a proto-fascism into the age of an Aquarius, and why you are having these experiences and how it's related to the overall unity or oneness or what have you. And if you have my questions, I'll listen over the air. Thank you, George.
Okay, Maya, you already always ask interesting questions. Let's start with the mantis thing, Stuart. Maybe the way to attack that one is, though the entity told you, remember who you work for. What does that mean? What do you think? How did you take it? How did you take it to mean?
Well, I've taken it to mean many different things, and I will say that part of the long-term relationship that we end up with in our experience is that I have interpreted that in many different ways. Of course, some of the more prosaic takes initially would be this being is implying that I work for it. But as I've gone on over time to take deeper, longer looks, I don't actually feel like that's the read that I have now. I'm not sure what was meant by that, but here's what I think is fascinating about these intelligences and how they prefer to evoke and elicit our own development, because instead of giving me an answer, it gave me a question or a phrase that was cryptic enough to cause me to become obsessed with it for years. And that koan in my life became something that helped me change and grow. So I didn't arrive with a satisfying conclusion about this is what they meant by remember who you work for. I've thought about it every way you can think of, but it did change me. Living the question changed me and helped me grow. And I do think this is a strategy, or at least a set of preferences that we often see with non-human entities, is that they go about things in angular and oblique theatrical ways for purposes. Clearly, that's the kind of signaling, languaging, and art that they prefer. And I, as an artist, I do have to respect it, because it's quite effective as a strategy to get human beings to grow into the depth of the question instead of collapsing the question to our existing worldview when the event occurs. Does that answer your question fairly?
I think she's off the line now, but I have the other two questions that we can get to on the other side, because we didn't have enough time to get to all of them. But the DMT question is pretty interesting that we could get into. Yeah, I think the approach that these entities take certainly is attention grabbing. If that what they want to do is to get you to focus on them, that it certainly has worked in the visage that appeared to you on New Year's Eve. But we're talking with Stuart Davis, Jay King, Kirsten Blackburn about the Experiencer Group. Stuart Davis, I want to give you a chance to answer the second question from Mayad. She was asking about DMT, and as anyone familiar with that knows that there are a lot of people who, under the influence of that, have encountered entities, aliens, insectoids, all kinds of different entities. What do you make of that, and do you see a connection of any sort to your mantid encounters?
I do, and I also want to offer to her, if she wanted to do a deeper dive into the purple robe, other elements of the experience that she was referring to, she can just Google man meets mantis that audio doc goes into real depth with all of that. So there's more resources for her there if she's interested in looking further. As to the DMT and the experience that I had, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that these entities, take for instance mantids in particular, they show up in dream states, they show up in waking awareness states, they show up in DMT trips, they show up in abduction scenarios, they show up in subtle realms, gross realms. They clearly have a facility and access with a variety of states and dimensions that we don't. They appear to have a passport that functions with equal versatility in dreaming realms as it does in concrete nuts and bolts abduction experiences. And there's a lot about that that we don't understand and perhaps don't have the facility or capacity to at this point. But I think that it's really noteworthy that across cultures, these entities are appearing with great consistency in a myriad number of forms and modalities. I am totally certain that there is a connect point between, for instance, I don't know how my fever was an important element, but I do feel that it was. Something about the fever allowed or at least improved the conditions which were optimum for that entity showing up. And obviously something about DMT and, I mean, within the experiencer group, George, we've had some really interesting ones on aliens and artists where a whole group of people went to the Amazon to do an ayahuasca ceremony together, and everyone who did the ayahuasca ceremony experienced a mantis entity.
Huh.
All of them. Now, that is a data point that I think merits a long look from us. I don't have the answers to that, but I think that her question points to a connection that's there. They show up in all of these realms and dimensions, and boy, that must be nice to have that ability.
Yeah, I mean, that would be like a bunch of people going to sleep out on a camping trip and all having the same dream. That would be
exactly.
Yeah. Before we go back, a lot of folks on the phones. Kirsten, before we go back to the phones, can you give me sort of a recap on how people hook up with the experiencer group and a little bit more about the vetting process? How do you know that the people you're letting in are not jerks?
Sure. Well, I'd actually like to share this answer with Jay because he's kind of the mastermind behind the website and how it works. But we... you go to theexperiencergroup.com, and there's a little button there that says "Become a Member," and you ask, or you're asked three questions, and you're also asked to give a link to a social media site where we can kind of make sure that you're, you know, who you say you are, and then you answer the two questions, the two additional questions about your experience. Or experiences, and also how you heard about us. And then with that, I'll pass it on to Jay because he can go a little bit more into depth about how we do this.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we started with a questionnaire, like in our first beta phase, the first few weeks of like 12 questions, and we realized that was overwhelming. And with these three questions, it just gets kind of to the heart of the situation. And, you know, we recognize that there's a little bit of risk involved. But basically with connecting the socials that people already have, it's basically like what we want to do is just make sure that people aren't jerks, like you say, and also to make sure that the people are who they say they are. And so we want people that are just, honest to gosh experiencers, and that they're not going to come in hot and just kind of like, you know, be negative to people. It's really important to us. We want this to be a safe space. We want this to be an oasis, a sanctuary for people. And, you know, that's critically important. And so it's been helpful, I'll say. And like the amazing thing is just like the tenor of the people that are coming in. It just feels like a different space than much of the rest of the web. I mean, like just George, with you, just in the last couple of weeks, you know, Twitter, like with regard to like how it responded, how some people on UFO Twitter responded to your amazing, you and Jeremy's amazing article and those pictures, you know, like, but, you know, according to Twitter, you know, Twitter can just, you know, depending on the day, depending on how Twitter gets out of, UFO Twitter gets out of bed in the morning, it could be like a, you know, it's like a firing squad inside of a dumpster fire on an outer ring of hell, you know what I mean? And we don't want to have that in our community. And so that's what we're working on.
Well, let me just say, too, that you can sign up for the Experiencer Group and you can be completely anonymous. We, as founders, are the only ones who read the answers to these questions. No one else does. And you can sign up with a completely anonymous name. You can sign up and know that if you come into a Zoom meeting with other experiencers, we make sure that everyone knows that, you know, to keep these accounts and identities confidential. We say that in our opening statement, and we say it in our closing statement. It's kind of like in recovery where you say, you know, what happens here stays here, and do not talk about it beyond this meeting. And we also don't record those meetings. So we make sure that it's very safe in that regard as well.
All right. Let's take a couple of calls. First time caller, Matt in Paradise, California. Hi, Matt. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, hi. Well, hey, thank you, George. Appreciate your taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I had a question. I wanted to make a statement. I don't know how, you know, I'm brand new with this and I'm really shook up about this.
Hey, you're among friends here. You're among friends.
Well, I appreciate that, you guys. I really do. You know, it's that campfire that happened here. It was the worst, fire in California history, and it killed a lot of people. And before the fire, I remember there was on my security cam, I even posted it on YouTube, and I don't want to tell you what that is, or unless it's okay. But it shows shapeshifters in my backyard and everything. And it's just bananas because I was gang stalked and electronically harassed. Now, I haven't heard a lot of that. I heard some from George Norrie a little bit. Now, I didn't want to get into that because I don't know what your guys, the whole conversation is tonight. But I wanted to say that because this happened and then that fire happened and it wiped out the entire town. And I've been living in a little fifth wheel trailer and it's weird where I live, too, because I was directed here. It's very weird how I got here. All right. And the people that I live with, I'm not even sure about in this house. I live in this driveway with these, you know, I don't know if it's government or, you know, alien stuff. I'm not kidding you. I'm serious. You know, there's an 80-year-old woman here that gets out of bed and she walks for a mile a day and then she goes and waters the hole and then she goes to work for full time. I don't even understand how she does that at 80 years old. Right? There's weird things going on. That's all I'm saying. So have you heard anything weird about this campfire thing? Because I moved here from St. Louis, and, you know, I knew George Norrie. I heard, you know, I've heard you guys talking for years. I never called in, but this is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life, this thing that's happened to me. I mean, the gang stalking, the electronic harassment, the shapeshifters in my backyard, the PG&E and AT&T trucks that were there before the fire that were all over the place. I mean, just all over in this little neck of the woods that was up in the middle of nowhere. What do you think? I mean, do you guys have any ideas? Has anyone else called about this?
Let's give us a second here, Matt, to absorb that. I mean, it was a terrible disaster. All the trees and animals and homes and lives that were destroyed. It's a horrible experience. You might think that there would be some residual negativity around there. Stuart, what do you think? I think we might have lost Stuart.
George. Sorry.
Okay. We were talking about the Paradise, the fire that back there in Northern California that wiped out such a large area, so many homes, so many lives lost, the animals, the trees, it's just a horrible thing.
Matt, I was going to share first is just that I hope your circumstances improve. I mean, that just sounds like a tremendous amount of suffering. I do not have any particular insight because I don't have access to the information around the high strangeness preceding and following the event, but I hope that you can find a new set of conditions, a new place to live, and that, you know, this is actually exactly the point of why we created the experiencer group, which is so many experiencers of all variety feel isolated. They feel siloed in a town or country, wherever they may live, even inside of their own families, oftentimes feeling that profound soul level black sheep quality. And so what I have to offer there is just that we're wishing you the best. And, you know, if there's some way we can be of support to you. Otherwise, I don't have much insight beyond that.
Matt, appreciate the call. We are going to go back to the phone line, this time on the international line. Carl in Ontario. Hi, Carl. You're on Coast to Coast with Stuart, Jay, and Kirsten.
Hello. Yeah, I was on earlier in the week with George and Ori. It was like the table moving back and forth. The loud scratching, it would just get louder when the lights got turned off and it got quiet. Something touched me on my head. And when we moved, it seemed like whatever it was followed us like an attachment. My mother said someone was in the apartment. She thought maybe my dad had something to do with it. They just went through a divorce. And it was a big one-bedroom apartment, a duplex, an older house. And she put a chair in front of the washroom door. My bedroom was in the back of the house. It was built on to the house. And it was a calm night. She had the washroom door, washroom window open. The door just went flying open with the chair. You could hear it, you know, the kitchen chair. She came quick. What's going on? And, yeah, I used to put my gospel, I put five gospel records on at night. It helped me sleep. And I started reading through the New Testament. I hardly ever went to church, read a chapter every night, and that really helped me. And I became a Christian then, too, started believing.
Thanks for sharing that experience. Any of the three of you want to take that one on? I mean, that's a pretty strong poltergeist, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think one thing that I hear there is, like, you know, there are these, as Stuart was kind of talking about before, sometimes people can have these conversations, or they can have, like, moments in their lives, like this kind of trauma and the trauma of divorce and what this guy was talking about. Like, when I was in that initial haunted home, my parents were divorcing as well in that situation. And, you know, there was a lot of kind of bickering and a lot of kind of negative energy. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a straight shot. It doesn't seem like a straight correlation, but I, you know, like, because maybe 50% of marriages fail, or not fail, fail's a bad word, but like 50% of marriages break up, right? So why aren't 50% of marriages, you know, experiencing haunted activity, right? But at the same time, there's that kind of like correlation where you see these kinds of like negative situations that seem to kind of like maybe attract something at some point, and
or at least open a door.
It'll take more time and more data to figure this stuff out.
Thanks for sharing, Carl. We're going to Lydia in Green Bay, Wisconsin, on the wild card line. Hi, Lydia. Good morning.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Since I was little, I was positive I was not from this world, right? And I found out my birth chart only happens like 28. This is really weird, but when I looked up on it, they knew all about my past lives and everything, and then it all made sense. But like, I don't know how to explain this. I don't want to creep anybody out.
Feel free. Go ahead, let her rip. But we've got about 3 minutes left in the show, so let her rip now.
Okay, so I was apparently, when I was born, it was not in favor of somebody close to my parents. And apparently, my past lives was of great wealth, and They have these Secret Service people who now read the birth charts of people, and they can take that away from you. And you had somebody on earlier and talking about everything that's going on and everything, and I'm pretty well, I have a block. Somebody's blocking me, my chart. And the woman in purple, or the mantis.
Right.
Remember?
Yeah, what about the mantis in purple?
You guys were talking about that, right?
Yes.
And what did the mantis say?
Remember who you work for.
Remember who you work for. Right. That's something I always say. And
I'll tell you what, Lydia, it doesn't sound like we're going to be able to help sort all this out. You got a lot of stuff going on, and we've only got about a minute left in the show. So I appreciate you calling in. Appreciate all the other callers as well. Stuart, I want to give you the last word. Again, I've got 45 seconds to talk about the experiencer group and invite people to join you.
Yeah, safe space, sanctuary for experiences of all variety, not just non-human abduction, but everything from precognition, out of body, lucid dreaming, spirituality itself, and a safe, protected membership site where people are vetted, and we actually curate the site to ensure that meetings, support groups are private, protected, and it's a positive, anomalous culture. I really feel like we're finally participating in the positive expression of the great part of this mystery, and we just want to invite anyone who feels the need for a connection. You don't have to be isolated. You don't have to be alone. Join us. Come in.
All right.
The water's fine.
Stuart Davis, the mantid arrival is about 12 days away. I'll keep you posted. Jay King, Kirsten Blackburn, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, George.
All right.
You, George.
I'll be in touch. Dr. Michio Kaku, our first guest, The God Equation, check that out. It's a great book. I want to say thanks to my colleagues there at Coast, Melissa Rodriguez and Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Ryan Stacey, Dan Galani, Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday night with my guest, Brandon Fugel, owner of Skinwalker Ranch, and filmmaker Jeremy Corbell. Good night, everyone.